Good morning and welcome to this segment of Your Morning Wake-Up Call. I'm your host, MK. Today we are talking about the psychiatric overdiagnosis and overmedication of our children, and in particular, the most vulnerable among them are foster kids. Joining us is a local investigative reporter, Amy Lynn, and she works for Searchlight New Mexico, which is a nonpartisan, nonprofit news organization dedicated to investigative reporting and innovative data journalism. Their mission is to focus high-impact investigative journalism on topics of local, regional, and national interest in order to allow the public to see into the remote recess of government and institutional intrigue and to expose abuses of power by government, business, and other institutions. Amy Lynn has been writing about social justice issues for the last three decades and written for publications including the New York Times, Philadelphia Inquirer, and Salon. And we've brought her in to help us discover what she's uncovered in her investigations of the overmedication of children in New Mexico. Welcome, Amy. It's a pleasure to have you with us
today.
It's
great to be here.
What inspired you to even begin investigating this issue, and how did you begin to find out about it?
I had just arrived at Searchlight, and our mission is to look at what's happening with children and child welfare. And there was a really good report from the Legislative Finance Committee in 2017 that looked at children's mental health and behavioral health issues. My eyes started to widen as I kept turning the pages, because what it really looked at was the number of children who were on medications in the state. And at a very young age, kids under the age of five were on stimulants, drugs like Valium, which is really unusual. I had never heard of a child that young being given Valium because it's a very addictive drug and it's a dangerous drug. Children under the age of five, under the age of seven, were on antipsychotic medications, which are the biggest gun in the arsenal. If you're a psychiatrist, that's what you give to an adult who has schizophrenia. And I had no idea that those drugs were being given to children. So I started thinking that this was something I really needed to look at.
Yeah. And of course, then you went on to begin to investigate this. And let's talk about psychiatrist Edwin Hall.
Well, Dr. Hall, his name popped up quite early in the process because I was also talking a lot to another Searchlight reporter, Ed Williams. Ed was looking at what was happening in treatment foster care, which is a level of foster care for kids who have more needs than typical. They've been very traumatized. And he had met some kids who mentioned that they had seen a psychiatrist who just seemed odd, gave them an awful lot of drugs, and wore a clown outfit. The clown doctor, that image stuck in my head for months. I was trying to figure out what was going on with Dr. Hall. And then all of a sudden, I found a woman, a grandmother. The grandmother had taken custody of the three children. She'd gotten them out of foster care. And when she got them from foster care and took them home, the foster care agency handed her this grocery bag full of medications. Her young kids, one was four, one was six, one was about nine. They were taking antipsychotics, they were taking antidepressants, stimulants for school, and then they were taking pills to help them go to sleep. And the psychiatrist was Dr. Hall, and she went and sat in on a session with him, which she tape recorded. She recorded it on her phone, I should say, because she was so scandalized and upset at this doctor. And I listened to the recording. It's just awful. What can I say? It was kind of astonishing. He paid no attention to the children. He never talked to the children during the session. And all he did was give them yet a new medication, which he seemed to do with every visit. So at that point, he quickly became central to my investigating. And there was another bit of synchronicity when I looked at the Albuquerque Journal and saw that his office had been raided, so to speak. There was a warrant, and the Attorney General's office went in and got his computers and all of his records. And it turned out that he was being investigated for overprescribing, and he was being investigated in regards to the deaths of six patients, and that grew to 36 patients who had died while they were under his care. So at that point, he became a very central character in my story.
Yeah, and now the 36 that you referred to were adults? Were they all adults?
The deaths were adult patients. But it turned out that Hall had relationships with treatment foster care agencies in that they sent their children to him, and he overprescribed to more than 700 children, according to the Attorney General. That investigation is ongoing. Dr. Hall was known for years to be a bad prescriber and a high-risk prescriber. He was an outlier in that sense. I don't think there are many like that. I think there are many good psychiatrists, well-meaning psychiatrists, who might prescribe badly, who might not understand that they're prescribing dangerous medications to children. And many children get these drugs from their primary care physicians as well, so psychiatrists aren't even involved. The problem with Dr. Hall is that the system did not catch him. There was no monitoring. There's no watchdog. And that's how that can happen.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about the flaws in the system that allowed a Hall to exist.
Well, for one, the agency that's like the parent to a child in foster care is Children, Youth, and Families. CYFD is their legal guardian, and it's their responsibility to take care of that child physically, mentally, in terms of their education, and make sure they're safe and healthy. If that is lacking, if there isn't enough oversight, that's where things like this can happen. And what does go on in foster care is that children have been traumatized. That's why they were taken from their homes. They've often had really nightmarish childhoods. They need a lot of care. And many of them do need counseling, and they need all kinds of support just to learn how to attach and trust again. They're very frightened. They may have all kinds of symptoms, and those symptoms make them difficult. I'm not going to say these are little angels. Children who have been traumatized can act very hyperactive, or they can just melt down at whatever. Their behavior is not easy for foster parents, and the foster parents get desperate and take them to a doctor and say, do something, do anything. Get this kid to go to sleep. Get this kid to calm down. And that's how the psychiatric drugs come into the picture. It's often a foster parent who really needs help, or it's a teacher who needs help.
Yeah, and again, back to Hall, there some of his kids that they're investigating are as young as 4 years old. And did you see any younger than that, even younger? It's hard to believe that we can even diagnose at that age when a brain is not fully formed.
The New York Times did some really good reporting on the number of kids who are in the crib who are getting psychiatric medications. And those children are 2, and they're being given stimulants for ADHD. That kind of thing, it really is mind-boggling. And it makes me think of the numbers. They're similar statistics. In the 1980s, I think it was something like 600,000 kids nationwide were considered to be on a psychotropic drug, they're called. By 2010, that number was 8 million. It was like a 15-fold increase. And this has everything to do with the fact that these are the drugs were marketed very aggressively by pharmaceutical companies. And pharmaceutical companies made a fortune, especially on antipsychotic medications. I have to say, I did talk to one psychiatrist about this, and he said that he wanted to remind me that the children we're talking about are extremely disturbed, and that there is a reason. A psychiatrist generally doesn't just toss pills at a child for no reason. And yet, it's extremely troubling, and there's just no way to even get your head around it or your arms around it. For one thing, there is no evidence at all that that's safe or effective. Nobody has ever tested a bunch of 2-year-olds on drugs and found out whether or not they did well. And the real problem is that we have no idea what it does long term. And there is evidence that especially antipsychotic drugs, that they actually shrink areas of the brain. They have a real effect on the synapses in the brain, and they can change the brain forever. So you could really be harming a child forever.
Yeah, and you see some of these kids also growing up, and by the time they're in high school, they're getting a secondary diagnosis, which means more drugs. By the time they're in college, they can be full-on psychotic, and then, of course, on drugs for the rest of their life and, you know, disability.
And what's not happening is no one is going in and treating the kid for what's really wrong, which is the trauma. So the child never has a chance to heal.
Right. And we place medications on top of the trauma, which then can complicate the issue.
Exactly.
Yeah. And can you talk about the kind of complications that some of these kids are then later exposed to after long-term use?
The drugs are manufactured for adults. Typically, they have FDA approval for people 17 and over. Some drugs are approved for kids 13 and over. There is none of these drugs are approved for use in very young children, certainly not for preschoolers. So that is all off-label use. That's legal. Off-label use is legal and it's widespread. A lot of us probably take a medication that's not prescribed for the thing we're taking it for. But to do it for children in this kind of way is just, it's staggering. A children's body is not an adult's body. If you give a child an antipsychotic medication, they're not going to act like the 40-year-old who got the medication in a clinical trial. And the other problem is that children respond more severely. If they have an adverse side effect, they tend to have worse adverse side effects than adults. And some of the adverse side effects, for example, obesity, can be just astonishing in young children. There are very young children on antipsychotic drugs who gain 100 pounds. Some children are 300 pounds by the time they're teenagers on an antipsychotic drug. And it's not their fault. They're not eating a lot. It's a physiological change. It's a metabolic change.
Yeah, so diabetes, heart
exactly.
issues, other just physiological risks.
The truth is, what I'm talking about and what I was writing about are children who are very young who are given 5, 6, 7 medications that they're taking at the same time. So when I'm saying that children are over-medicated, I mean really over-medicated. This is not a matter of a child having Prozac or a single medication. What's important to remember for anyone who's on medication is that it's never a good idea to just throw them away. It's dangerous, for one thing. There are medications that have very serious withdrawal symptoms, including Valium, which does require, in some cases, hospitalization. It can be life-threatening to go off of a benzodiazepine.
Yeah, especially suddenly.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right.
So these are no, this is why it's incredible that we're giving children these drugs, you know, in many ways, in some ways, at all that we're giving them. The fact that we're giving them 5 and 6 of these kinds of drugs at a time is just beyond, it's mind-boggling. But anyway,
well, it certainly needs to stop. The thing that I would suggest for anyone listening is if you're concerned about your medication and you're thinking that you might be over-medicated or on the wrong pills, go to your doctor and tell them. And if the doctor doesn't give you an answer that you like or can live with or that feels right to you, find another doctor.
Drugs can be used sometimes in helpful ways, and they can also, if used improperly, become life-threatening. And especially this level of a kind of drug where if you go off of it suddenly, you can die. And that's the
bottom
fact
line
of the matter. Yeah. So if you are thinking of going off of the drugs ever, it must be done with doctor's supervision. And as you say, if you can't find, if you talk to your doctor and they're not able to help you, you need to find another doctor. Do not attempt to do this on your own.
Exactly. In some cases, people take a year to get off certain psychiatric medications.
Yeah, even several years. Yeah, depending. Sometimes I know that is kind of one of the current challenges for people coming off the drugs is there aren't enough psychiatrists who can help them get off of it. So there's sort of this demand there for more doctors to help people get off and wean off the drugs. Did you find that?
Yes, there's a huge portion of New Mexico that doesn't have psychiatrists. There are psychiatrists in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, and that's about it. We're considered a health desert in that way. So people who are lucky have a good primary care physician or a family doctor.
Can you talk about some of the characters that you met along the way? For instance, Alyssa?
She had a very difficult childhood. I think she told me she was in 13 different schools by the time she got to high school. She was taken from her home fairly young, and then she was adopted, but she didn't have a good relationship with her adopted mother, and she was quite depressed. There was also abuse in the picture, and she really needed help. She said she got to a point where she just couldn't get out of bed and go to high school. She just didn't care anymore. She got taken to see Dr. Hall. He gave her Adderall, a stimulant for ADHD. I think later he gave her antipsychotic medications, and she was on so many different pills and then having reactions to the pills that she no longer knew whether she was reacting to the pills or was it her? Was it the depression? Was she crazy? Were the meds making her crazy? It was very hard for her, and she eventually ran away. She just had a really rough time, and she was on so many medications that it became difficult for her to get off and, let's say, start from zero, wean off of everything and figure out who she was. I don't mean to speak for her now. I haven't talked to Alyssa in a while, but she mentioned to me the last time we spoke that she really is still wondering who she is and what really is wrong, if anything. And she doesn't know if she'll ever know.
Yeah, it leaves just this kind of void there. Traumatizes the already traumatized victim. And can you talk about also the fact that when, you know, the kind of effect this can have on kids when we're utilizing medication as a solution versus the life skills, what can happen as a long-term effect of using medication as a solution?
Well, for one thing, as we were saying, the trauma, the original problem, doesn't get treated, and that's an issue. The other thing is that the child doesn't get a chance to repair the thing that needs to be repaired. Let's say it's an attachment issue. If there's a break in the attachment, what the child needs to learn is how to attach to somebody and how to have a good, healthy relationship with a human and be able to trust people again. A pill is not going to do that.
Right. And does this lead to long-term, acting as sort of a long-term gateway experience into illicit drug use down the road for these kids?
That's a really interesting question, and I wish I knew more about it. I don't know enough to really make an intelligent answer, but I think that if from a very early age you've been told there's something wrong with you and if you take your pill you'll be better, I'm sure it does lead you to believe that pills or a substance is going to make you better. You know, I do need to say, though, that there are times when medications appropriately used are life-saving, and the key is that it has to be appropriate. It has to be tailored to the child, and the child has to be monitored. I would never want people to think that I'm anti-medication. What I'm against is medication that's thrown at a child who hasn't been diagnosed, and when there's really no need for it. And that does happen more than you can imagine.
Right, right. So let's talk about Dr. Davis, George Davis, the former director of psychiatry for CYFD. He was aware that this was going on. Talk to us about the kind of efforts he made to reform.
I just have to thank George. I never could have done this story without him, and I just found him incredibly helpful. And he's just a crusader. He's really involved in wanting to help kids and to truly help them and not just to put a chemical straitjacket on them, which is how some people refer to psychiatric medications. When George was director at CYFD, he was aware early on that there was a movement across the country to take a real hard look at what was going on with psychiatric drugs in children, because children were starting to be given antipsychotic medication, which is really dangerous stuff and has never been tested on children. There is just no proof that it's safe or effective. And yet, children were getting these drugs and more, to the point where in some foster care, in some states like Texas, 40% of children in foster care were on antipsychotic medications. And there's just no way that number of kids needed to be on that kind of drug. At any rate, George, starting in 2006, started trying to think of ways to prevent this kind of thing from happening in New Mexico. And he kept trying. Basically, what he wanted was guidelines and regulations at CYFD that would at least make sure that kids who were on the drugs were on them for the right reasons. He was looking for monitoring, and he was looking for wise prescribing. So what George did was he decided that he would try to study ways to get some system going in New Mexico that would protect children. And for about 7 years, a group of doctors met and discussed what to do about medications in children and how to make sure things were appropriate.
And this was a task force, right?
It was a task force, yeah. But it didn't really kick into gear until about 2012. And that was when the federal government also started really worrying about children in foster care and poor children, because this is the scary part. The medication and the over-medicating goes on almost, like five times more with poor children than wealthier children. And so it becomes a class issue. You get a child who's in foster care who's had a trauma and been taken out of a violent home, let's say. That child needs help and doesn't get it and doesn't get it and doesn't get it. At the same time, if the child is given a lot of medications, the medications aren't necessarily helping. And oddly enough, antipsychotics can cause psychosis. It's a very odd thing. It can also cause violence, aggression. You just don't know what the pills are going to do. So by the time the kid is a teenager, there's a likelihood that there's some very deep-rooted stuff going on, and there's a lot of acting out, and there might be the kid is getting into crime or drugs or who knows what. And then the state's solution is to send children like that to residential treatment facilities. That's kind of the last gasp effort. At that point, it's very difficult for a kid to get back on his or her feet. And in fact, someone recently mentioned it as the residential treatment center to prison pipeline. Because what happens is children age out at 18, they're out of residential treatment, they don't have a home, there's no more foster care, they don't have skills, they're on drugs, they're on psychiatric drugs. A lot of them become homeless, or they do get caught up in the criminal justice system.
So we're talking about a hefty price tag to the state as well in terms of taking care of some of these kids, you know, once they're off the streets, or if they're institutionalized, or whether that's via prison system or disability. But it certainly becomes a cost to the state as well.
So it's just not a pretty picture. And I'm not saying this is all kids. There are certainly a lot of kids who do extremely well, and they're survivors. But there's just something that we're setting up for kids. It's a system that doesn't work. Foster children don't necessarily have to end up in residential treatment or on drugs or in prison. It just requires loving relationships. It's kind of simple.
But things may be turning around. There is some hope on the horizon.
There is. There is a bill that's being considered right now in the legislature, sponsored by Senator Bill Tallman. In general, it just puts some oversight into play that's never been there. If New Mexico could focus its money on women, prenatal care, birth and pregnancy, and really infancy, we're talking age 0 to 3. If we can focus on 0 to 3, we'll be so far ahead of the game.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Amy Lynn, for joining us today.
Thank you so much.